Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi, Herman and Corin. So we've mentioned little Ezra on a few podcasts. He's a little six-month-old boy who I'm currently holding, coming up on his seventh birthday. And he's a bundle of fun, even though sometimes he spends a lot of time looking at things that would be unsafe to put in his mouth. He's currently looking at the transceivers I ordered for my fiber optic network with great interest. So we're monitoring him very carefully at the moment. But something that I find really interesting. Oh, he said yeah. Something I find fascinating, Herman and Corin, is this, right? When my wife is really into reading, she's a big reader and research, and she did a whole bunch of learning before, like self-education before we had Ezra, about, you know, all the difference in parenting styles. And my personal strategy was to avoid information until the latest possible moment, because I knew that it would be very overwhelming. I mentioned that we, a couple of months before Ezra came into this world, decided that I needed to bite the bullet and, you know, open up YouTube. And the first thing that I saw was this avalanche of information about blowouts. We got about 10 seconds into our first video, and I was learning about the dangers of diaper blowouts, how to prevent diaper blowouts. And I didn't make it very far past that. Then you had, on the other end of it, you had these kind of very clinical parenting videos that looked like they were produced in the 1980s. They might have been. So there wasn't anything. I found it hard to find a gap. But when Ezra was born and we went home, it struck me as we've just become responsible for another human life. In this country, in Israel, where I live, the education for drivers is kind of ridiculous. I would say they have this extreme requirement. Just to be clear, I have a driver's license for many years, but in Israel they have this extreme driver's education and absolutely horrible road habits. Driving here feels like taking your life into your own hands. So you kind of wonder what's actually being taught in driver ed here. But regardless of that, we don't let people get behind the wheel of a car until they've had some kind of basic training to show what they're doing. Now, I'm not suggesting a surveillance or a nanny state that every prospective parent goes through gets their parenting license. But it strikes me as strange that this concept of pre-parenting education is still very foreign and has to be self-organized, at least here. My wife and I did a first aid course that was very good, but we organized that on our own initiative, or my wife did rather. But that's it. So my question, Herman and Corin, is my sister lives in London. Maybe she'll listen to this podcast or this episode even. And she and her husband did a course. I think it was through the NHS. And I said to her, shouldn't this be normal everywhere? That if you live in a country with, you know, subsidized or public health care, even if it's just a 2 or 3 night thing where they tell you, here's how to change a diaper. And yes, this is a blowout, and this is how you prevent a blowout. Or the basic first aid stuff that we did ourselves. And really a whole bunch of other things. I mean, how to hold a baby safely. There is just this huge knowledge gap. I feel like it's kind of strange that we have to go onto YouTube or, you know, get you. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with learning. Family members might be on hand to tell you how to do things, or... And I guess it's a bit like learning to drive from your father driving you around a car park. But that's not how driving education works to get a license anymore. So it seems strange that. And the other thing is, of course, not everyone has close family living nearby or in the country. Neither my wife nor I do. So that's not something that you can really count upon. So Herman and Corin, I'd love to chat upon, I think, a worthy topic for our podcast, which is this question of parenting education. We love learning from countries that do things well and give us ideas for how things could be done better here. So Herman and Corin, what is the actual state of play for someone who is becoming a parent for the first time, and they want to get just a basic level of education without having to troll through dubious YouTube videos and learn way more about blowouts than anyone should ever have to, what are the better alternatives? Over to you guys.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Korn, and I have to say, that audio from Daniel really hit home today. Hearing little Ezra in the background, making those happy sounds while simultaneously trying to eat a fiber optic transceiver, it is a perfect snapshot of the beautiful, terrifying chaos that is early parenthood.
It really is. I am Herman Poppleberry, and I have been thinking about this ever since Daniel sent that voice note over. It is amazing how fast Ezra is growing. 6 months already. But Daniel brings up such a profound point. We are sitting here in Jerusalem, a place with a very high birth rate and a lot of emphasis on family. Yet the path to actually learning how to keep a tiny human alive is surprisingly fragmented.
It is the driving license analogy that really got me. Daniel mentioned that in Israel, the requirements to get behind the wheel are incredibly rigorous. You have the theory test, the minimum number of lessons, the internal exam, the external exam. It is a whole ordeal. And yet, when you bring a baby home from the hospital, they just kind of wave you off and say, good luck, try not to break it.
Exactly. And let us be clear, we are not suggesting a parenting license. That is a philosophical and ethical minefield that leads straight to a very dark place. But the question of why the education isn't a standard, subsidized part of the healthcare package is a fascinating one. We have subsidized vaccines, we have subsidized prenatal scans, but the actual skill set of parenting? That is often left to the individual to figure out through trial and error or, as Daniel found, the overwhelming avalanche of the internet.
So, let's dig into that first part of his question. Why isn't this standard? Why isn't a first aid and safety course for parents as fundamental as a standard checkup?
I think there are a few layers to this, Korn. The first is historical and cultural. For the vast majority of human history, parenting education was communal. You lived in multi-generational households or close-knit villages. You saw your sisters, your cousins, and your neighbors raising children long before you had your own. The education was baked into the social fabric.
Right, the village. But we have largely traded the village for the nuclear family and the individual apartment.
Precisely. And the healthcare systems we have today are largely built on a medical model that focuses on pathology. Doctors are trained to fix things that are broken. They are great at diagnosing an ear infection or a heart murmur. But parenting education falls under the umbrella of wellness and social support, which has historically been underfunded compared to acute medical care. There is this unspoken assumption that parenting is natural or instinctual.
That is a huge misconception right there. The idea that because we are biologically capable of reproducing, we are biologically programmed with the knowledge of how to perform infant cardiopulmonary resuscitation or how to identify a safe sleeping environment.
It is a dangerous myth. There is a huge difference between the biological drive to care for an infant and the technical knowledge required for modern safety. For example, look at the history of sudden infant death syndrome guidelines. For decades, the advice was to put babies on their stomachs to sleep. It wasn't until the Back to Sleep campaign in the early 1990s that we realized that putting babies on their backs reduced the risk by over 50%.
And that is still evolving. I was reading that even though we have known this for 30 years, the National Institutes of Health actually announced last year, in April 2025, that they were stepping away from leading that specific campaign. It is being left to nonprofits now, which makes the messaging even more fragmented for parents like Daniel.
It is a worrying trend, especially since a study in JAMA Pediatrics just showed that sleep-related infant deaths actually jumped by nearly 12% recently. That isn't instinctual. That is data-driven safety that requires constant, clear communication.
And that leads into the second reason for the lack of subsidization, the cost versus the perceived return on investment for the state. Governments and insurance companies are often very short-sighted. They look at the immediate cost of providing a 4-hour first aid workshop for every new parent and see a massive line item.
But they are missing the second order effects. If you train parents to recognize the early signs of respiratory distress or how to handle a choking incident, you are potentially saving millions in emergency room visits and intensive care costs. Not to mention the lifelong societal impact of preventing a tragic accident. The MIHOPE report released in late 2025 confirmed that for every dollar spent on these early support programs, the long-term return to society is estimated to be between $2 and $6. Some studies even put it as high as $12 when you factor in future earnings and reduced social spending.
That is a massive return. So why is the needle moving so slowly?
I think liability is another factor, especially in places like the United States, though it is less of an issue here in Israel or in the United Kingdom. If a government body or a public health service mandates a specific parenting course, they are, in a sense, taking on a level of responsibility for the outcomes. If something goes wrong despite the training, there is a fear of litigation. It is much easier for the system to say, "We provided the medical care, the rest is up to you."
It is interesting that Daniel mentioned his sister in London and the National Health Service. The United Kingdom actually does have some of this integrated through health visitors. After you have a baby, a nurse or a trained professional actually comes to your house several times to check on the baby and the mother, and to offer basic safety and feeding advice.
Yes, and in Israel we have the Tipat Chalav clinics, which literally translates to a drop of milk. These are family health centers where you go for regular growth checks and vaccinations. They have actually been modernizing lately. They launched a new app called Tip Up in 2025 that lets parents track growth and access professional articles directly. They even just added a free dental cavity prevention service for infants starting this year. But even with these updates, the clinics are often very time constrained. You might get 10 minutes with a nurse who is trying to see 30 babies that day. It isn't always the deep dive into safety and first aid that parents are craving.
And that brings us to the second part of Daniel's prompt. When the system fails to provide that clear, subsidized path, parents turn to the internet. And as Daniel described, that can be a nightmare. He called it an avalanche of information.
The YouTube problem is real. The issue isn't a lack of information, it is a lack of curation and the presence of conflicting incentives. If you are a content creator on YouTube or TikTok, your goal is views and engagement. Often, the most sensational or fear-based content gets the most traction. You end up with these hyper-clinical 80s-style videos that feel dated and scary, or you get the influencers who are more concerned with their aesthetic than with evidence-based safety protocols.
I have seen those. You search for how to help a choking baby and you have to sit through a 30-second ad for a VPN, followed by a 3-minute intro about the creator's morning routine before you get to the actual life-saving information. In a real emergency, that is worse than useless. It is dangerous.
And then you have the SEO problem. Search engine optimization. The articles that show up at the top of Google are often there because they have the right keywords, not necessarily because they have the most accurate medical information. This creates what psychologists call the paradox of choice. When you are presented with too much conflicting information, you either become paralyzed with anxiety, or you just pick the one that sounds the most convincing, regardless of its validity.
So let us talk about the alternatives. If a first-time parent like Daniel is looking for reliable, verified information without the digital noise, where should they actually go?
The first place I always recommend is the official bodies of pediatrics. In the United States, that is the American Academy of Pediatrics, or AAP, which runs a website called healthychildren.org. It is an incredible resource. Everything on there is vetted by actual pediatricians. It is evidence-based, it is updated regularly, and it covers everything from car seat safety to how to handle a fever.
Does Israel have an equivalent?
We do. The Israel Pediatric Association has resources, and as I mentioned, the Ministry of Health has been beefing up the digital library on the TipUp app. But you have to be proactive. It isn't always pushed to you.
What about the physical, hands-on training? Daniel mentioned he and his wife did a first aid course that they organized themselves. That seems like a high barrier for a lot of people.
It is. But there are organizations like Majin David Adam here in Israel, or the Red Cross and St. John Ambulance internationally. They offer specific infant and child first aid courses. The key is to look for courses that are certified. You want a course where you are actually practicing on a mannequin. You can't learn how to do back blows for a choking infant just by watching a video. You need to feel the pressure and the rhythm.
I think there is also a great value in community-led, but professionally moderated groups. There are organizations that facilitate new parent groups where a professional, like a lactation consultant or a pediatric nurse, leads the discussion. It provides that social support Daniel was missing, while still keeping the information grounded in reality.
That is such a good point. We actually touched on some of the psychological aspects of this back in episode 227 when we talked about parenting in the age of AI. One of the things we discussed was how technology can either isolate us or connect us. If you are using an app to track every single diaper change and milliliter of milk, it can actually increase your anxiety because you are constantly looking for patterns that might not be there. But if you use technology to find a local group of parents who are meeting in a park with a trained facilitator, that is a game changer.
It is about moving from data to wisdom. The internet gives you data, but the community and the professionals give you wisdom.
Exactly, and I think we need to push for a cultural shift where we view this education not as an optional extra, but as a basic right of every child to have a safe environment. Imagine if, as part of the standard discharge process from a hospital after birth, every parent was given a voucher for a subsidized, local, hands-on first aid and safety course.
That would be incredible. It would normalize the idea that learning how to be a parent is a process, not an instinct. It would also help bridge the socioeconomic gap. Right now, the parents who have the time and the money are the ones taking these private courses. The parents who are working multiple jobs or struggling financially are the ones most likely to rely on whatever free, unverified content they can find on social media.
And those are often the families at the highest risk for preventable accidents. It is a classic example of how a lack of public investment exacerbates inequality.
So, let's get practical for a minute. If someone is listening to this and they are expecting their first child, or they have a little one like Ezra at home, what is the step-by-step approach to building a reliable knowledge base?
Step 1. Start with the heavy hitters. Bookmark healthychildren.org or your local equivalent, like the NHS website in the UK. Make these your first stop for any medical or safety question. If the information isn't there, be very skeptical of where you find it elsewhere.
Step 2. Sign up for a physical first aid course. Do not rely on YouTube. Find a local Red Cross, Mog and David Adam, or hospital-led workshop. Make sure it includes infant CPR and choking protocols. It is a 4-hour investment that could save a life.
Step 3. Vet your social media. If you are going to follow parenting influencers, look at their credentials. Are they a doctor, a nurse, a certified safety expert? If they are just a parent with a nice camera and a lot of opinions, take everything they say with a massive grain of salt.
Step 4. Find your local community health resources. Whether it is Teapot Chalav here or a community center elsewhere, find out what free or low-cost services are available. Often, there are lactation consultants or sleep specialists who run group sessions that are much more affordable than private consultations.
And step 5, trust your pediatrician, but also be an advocate for yourself. If you have a safety concern, ask them. Don't be afraid to take up their time. That is what they are there for.
I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, Herman. The idea of the Finnish baby box. For those who don't know, for decades, the government of Finland has given every expectant mother a box filled with essentials, clothes, bedding, toys. And the box itself has a small mattress at the bottom, so it can be used as the baby's first bed.
It is a brilliant piece of public policy. But the most important part isn't the stuff in the box. To get the box, the mother has to visit a doctor or a municipal prenatal clinic before her 4th month of pregnancy.
Right. It is an incentive for engagement with the healthcare system. The box is the hook, but the real value is the medical checkups and the education that come with it. And it is spreading. Scotland has a similar program now. By the end of 2025, they had delivered over 360,000 boxes. It is estimated to save families about £400 per child. But more importantly, it ensures every family has a safe sleep space.
And look at the results. Finland has one of the lowest infant mortality rates in the world. It is a direct refutation of the idea that we should just leave parents to figure it out on their own.
So why hasn't this model been adopted more widely? Is it just the cost?
It is cost, but it is also a different philosophy of the role of the state. In many countries, there is a strong resistance to anything that looks like the government telling people how to live their private lives. There is this idea of the home as a private sanctuary. But when it comes to basic safety and health, I think that argument falls apart. We don't think it is an overreach for the government to tell us we have to wear seatbelts or that we can't smoke in public buildings. Why is providing life-saving education seen as a burden rather than a service?
It is a strange double standard. We have no problem with the state regulating the safety of the toys we buy or the formula we feed our infants, but the moment we talk about educating the people who are actually using those things, it becomes controversial.
I think there is also a bit of a gendered component here, if we are being honest. Parenting has historically been viewed as women's work, and therefore, it has been undervalued and seen as something that women just know how to do. By making it a formal, educated skill set, we are acknowledging the immense labor and complexity involved in raising a child.
That is a deep insight. It is about professionalizing the most important job in the world.
Exactly. And when you professionalize something, you fund it, you create standards, you create paths for success.
I am curious about your thoughts on the role of technology going forward. We talked about the downsides of the YouTube avalanche, but do you see a world where AI or more curated digital platforms could actually solve this problem?
I do, but it requires a shift in how we build those tools. Imagine an AI assistant that is trained exclusively on the database of the American Academy of Pediatrics and the latest peer-reviewed research. Instead of a general search that gives you 5 million results, you get a direct, evidence-based answer that is tailored to your child's age and development.
Like a digital Tibet Chalav nurse in your pocket.
Precisely. But the key is the data source. We have to move away from the ad-driven, engagement-based model of the current internet. We need public interest technology that is funded by healthcare systems, not by selling our data or showing us ads for strollers.
It is interesting because we are seeing some movement in this direction. There are apps now that are being prescribed by doctors for things like postpartum depression or managing chronic conditions. Why not a prescribed parenting education app that is verified and subsidized?
That would be a fantastic start, but again, it can't replace the human element. You still need that physical course to practice the Heimlich maneuver. You still need the pediatrician to look your baby in the eye and make sure they are hitting their milestones. Technology should be the scaffold, not the entire building.
I think about Daniel and Ezra again. Daniel is a smart guy. He is tech savvy. He is a researcher. If he is feeling overwhelmed by the avalanche of information, imagine how someone feels who doesn't have those skills or resources.
It is a massive failure of our current system. We are essentially gaslighting parents. We tell them that their child's safety is the most important thing in the world, and then we give them no clear, reliable, and affordable way to learn how to ensure that safety. We leave them to navigate a digital wilderness filled with misinformation and fear.
And then we wonder why parental anxiety and burnout are at all-time highs.
Exactly. The mental health implications are enormous. If you are constantly second-guessing yourself because you read 3 different things on 3 different websites, you are living in a state of perpetual stress. That stress impacts your ability to bond with your child, it impacts your relationship with your partner, and it impacts your overall well-being.
So, the argument for subsidized parenting education isn't just about physical safety, it is about mental health and societal stability.
It really is. It is a foundational investment in the future. If we want a healthy, resilient society, we have to start by supporting the people who are raising the next generation.
You know, we have done over 400 episodes of this show, and we often talk about these complex technical or philosophical problems. But this one feels so fundamentally human. It is about the gap between our biological reality and our modern technological environment.
It is the ultimate weird prompt, isn't it? Why do we make it so hard to do the most natural thing in the world?
It really is. And I think the answer lies in that historical shift we talked about. We lost the village, and we haven't quite figured out how to build a digital or institutional replacement that actually works.
But we are starting to see the blueprints. Whether it is the Finnish model, the NHS health visitors, or the emerging field of digital therapeutics, the pieces are there. We just need the political and social will to put them together and fund them.
I hope Daniel and his wife keep up that proactive approach. It is inspiring to see them taking it into their own hands, even if they shouldn't have to. And little Ezra, well, if he is already interested in fiber optics, he is definitely a Poppleberry in the making.
He is going to be a genius, that one. Just keep the transceivers out of his mouth for a few more years.
Good advice. Well, I think we have covered a lot of ground today. From the driving license analogy to the economic return on investment to the dangers of SEO-driven parenting advice.
It has been a deep dive for sure, and I think the main takeaway is that parenting education is a vital public health issue that deserves to be treated with the same seriousness as any other medical intervention.
Absolutely. And to all the parents out there listening, if you are feeling overwhelmed, you are not alone. The system is currently designed to be overwhelming. Take it one step at a time, stick to the verified sources, and don't be afraid to ask for help.
Well said, Korn. And hey, if you have been enjoying My Weird Prompts and you find these discussions helpful, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and join the conversation.
It really does. We love hearing from you, and your feedback keeps us going. You can find us on Spotify and at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We have a full archive of all 499 episodes there, including the one we mentioned today about parenting in the age of AI.
And thank you to Daniel for sending in such a thoughtful and timely prompt. It is always a pleasure to discuss these things, especially when it involves a new member of the household.
Definitely. We will have to get Ezra on the show for a guest spot once he starts talking.
I can't wait to hear his take on the state of the fiber optic industry.
Me too. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry.
Until next time, stay curious and stay safe.
Take care, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.